This is the Daily Actor Podcast. I'm Lance Carter, and in this episode, I'm talking with Curtis Armstrong. In films like Risky Business, Revenge of the Nerds, Better Off Dead, and One Crazy Summer, even Moonlighting, the TV series that he was on with Bruce Willis, he created some of the most memorable characters and had some of the best comedic performances ever. So I love Curtis Armstrong. I just grew up watching him, and I completely adore the guy. Since that burst of genius, he's been working nonstop. He's appeared in hundreds of films and TV shows. He's recurring right now on New Girl and Supernatural, and he voices Snot on American Dad. He's recently partnered up with his Nerds co-star, Robert Carradine, to create, produce, and host the TBS reality show King of the Nerds. I talked to Curtis about his incredible career, his early theater work, creating his characters, and King of the Nerds. And now a couple quick plugs. If you need a website, casting director mailing labels, career coaching, lists of headshot photographers in your area, we've got all of that and more. Just head on over to dailyactor.com. And now, here's Curtis.
First, I just want to say, man, you were in every single movie that I worshipped growing up. It's Risky Business, Revenge of the Nerds, Better Off Dead, and then Moonlighting, which was one of my favorite TV shows. So, I mean, honestly, to talk to you is just a complete treat for me.
Well, it's really nice. I mean, those are the cornerstones of everything, basically, that I've ever done, are those four jobs. And, you know, they happened within that one decade, which is, you know, I mean, sort of amazing. At the time, of course, it didn't seem to mean that much, but, you know, those were the sorts of movies which gained reputation over time and are now much more highly regarded even than they were at the time. In fact, they weren't that well regarded at the time. I think in general. But they, as the years have passed, they just become really important to people, and I'm proud to have been part of them.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that they weren't. I mean, my group of friends, I mean, we practically knew every single line of all those movies.
I mean, I know that they were popular with people, you know, average people who saw them. I just meant that critically or commercially they were not that popular. When it comes to that side of it, they weren't that popular. None of those movies really, I think, critically would be on anybody's list of great movies from the 80s. I mean, the irony of that is that, you know, something like Porky's, you know, probably is, in retrospect, better regarded critically than Revenge of the Nerds or Better Off Dead would be. And Risky Business sort of falls into a weird category because it was sort of expected to be something that it wasn't. It was kind of expected to be a teenage sex film, but it wound up being really an art film. And I saw it again just a few months ago with Paul Brickman and John Avnet, the director and writer and producer of it, and we saw it up in Santa Barbara at the University of Santa Barbara, and it was astonishing to see how well it holds up, you know, as a film that was, you know, not really. It had a lot working against it in a way, because I think that people's expectations were such that once it finally showed up, they were sort of confused by it.
Yeah, you know, I watched it about maybe two and a half years ago, and you were completely right, man. It does hold up. I mean, it's a great, just really, really great.
I mean, the funny thing is that, you know, one of the things that usually will kill something like that is the soundtrack. And in that case, you've got Tangerine Dream, which is so 80s. You know, it's, you know, the synth music, that whole thing is just so 80s, and yet, because it's Tangerine Dream, and because it's that particular type of music, there's a dreamlike quality to it that is makes it just the perfect choice for music for that movie, which is so much about dreams in a lot of ways.
Now, that was your first film role, right?
Yeah,
because I know you did a ton of theater before then. Was that
right?
Were you in the L.A. area doing theater, or did you?
Oh no! I was in New York.
Oh, okay.
I started in Detroit in the theater, which was my hometown, and that was where I'd gotten my first professional job in regional theater, was in Michigan. And I'd co-founded a theater company in Ann Arbor after attending an acting academy for 2 years. The graduates of that formed their own theater company, and we ran that for about a year and a half in Ann Arbor. And then I moved to New York and started working in New York and doing national tours and dinner theaters and pretty much everything. And wound up doing some off-Broadway plays, which got noticed, and that was how I started auditioning for films. That was never in the mix for me. I was never considering anything but stage work, which was what I really loved. But then they, you know, Risky Business happened, and then it went from, you know, there, the director of Revenge of the Nerds was a fan of Risky Business, so Revenge of the Nerds happened, and then Savage Steve Holland was the director of Better Off Dead, and he was a fan of Risky Business, and, you know, so it's just all of that, everything that happened to me in the 80s all came from Risky Business. It made everything else possible.
Were you primarily doing comedies in theater, or I mean, how did your sort of
everything? I mean, I wasn't typecast in the theater at all. You know, I did classical. I was trained in classical theater, so I did Shakespeare, I did Molière, I did Pinter, I did a lot of things. I mean, all different types of things. And then probably the biggest thing that I had gotten was in 79, I guess. I did a national tour of like 77 cities over a year of a Pulitzer Prize-winning play called Da, which had been on Broadway by Hugh Leonard. And that was a big deal, and we sort of, that tour was split in half, and in between the two tours, I did an off-Broadway play called The Irish Hebrew Lesson by Wolf Mankiewicz, and that ran for a while and got some really nice notices, and that was what, those shows were what allowed me to start reading for Broadway plays. And I never did any Broadway plays. I never got into a Broadway play, but the fact that I was reading for them was enough, and so they started seeing me for movies.
Have you thought about doing another show? I'd love to see you do something.
Oh, I think about it all the time, but it's just hard to do. I mean, the last one I did was about 8 years ago, and that was here at the Geffen Theater. We did a new play by, or what was then a new play by Sam Shepard. But it's been, you know, it's just hard now, you know, to, I can't just go to regional theaters for, you know, 4 months out of the year or whatever. You know, it's not as easy as it was to do that kind of thing.
You know, your work is so so darn funny. I mean, and the early stuff you did, were those roles written like that? Because each of those characters you did were so completely unique. Like, you've never seen anybody like those people, you know, and they're classic, you know.
Well, Risky Business was written exactly like that. There was no room or need for any kind of you know, improvisation or anything. It was just so perfectly written by Paul Brickman. It didn't require that. And yet, when we went to Revenge of the Nerds, the script was very sort of unfinished in a way, especially when it came to some of the smaller characters. And Booger didn't really exist in the script much as anything but a sight gag. He was really sort of the nerd's version of Ogre in the original script. And we spent about 2 weeks working on the script. And then we wound up doing a lot of improv on the set as well. And the characters sort of came together that way. But it was a different type of script. It wasn't, you know, Paul Brickman had written Risky Business for 7 years. You know, I mean, he took a lot of time with that. And so once we got actually on the set, it was set. But it wasn't that way with Revenge of the Nerds, and it wasn't that way with Better Off Dead. If you read what Savage has said about that, he actually does himself a disservice, because he claims that nothing that winds up funny in either of those two movies was anything he wrote. It was all stuff that we made up, which is not true. But we did come up with a lot of stuff on the fly. But that's the kind of director he is. I mean, he was never overly protective about anything, and if anybody had a better idea, he would throw out whatever he had written happily. And so that was also, you know, a lot of the stuff in Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer are things that we came up with on the set.
Are you still auditioning a lot? Are you still in the trenches, or do people mostly call you up and ask you if you want to take a role?
It's different. It varies. You know, sometimes for some things I have to audition. For some things they just call up and offer it. It depends on the part or what the project is, or if I know the people, or you know, I never take for granted that everybody knows who I am, and is, you know, especially with movies, you know, they always insist on it. And with some TV shows, like currently now I'm doing New Girl and Supernatural, and both of those I read for on the same day, which still amazes me. I went in the morning and read for Supernatural, and then had lunch and then read for New Girl, and wound up doing both of them.
Turned out to be a good day.
Yeah, it was a good day. But I mean, I think, you know, they wanted to see what I did, but, you know, they obviously, those people knew who I was.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they want to see.
Do you still like auditioning?
No, I don't know anyone who likes auditions. Auditions are horrible. You know, I mean, 9 times out of 10, or 8 times out of 10, it's a waste of everybody's time. But, you know, it's part of what we do. And I don't resent auditioning, but it's not something I look forward to at all.
Yeah, I'm an actor as well, and I hate it. It's miserable.
Yeah, everyone hates it. I mean, who really? I don't think I've ever met anyone who says, you know what I really love about acting? Auditioning. I just have never known it.
You know, I've interviewed a bunch of people. Sometimes they say oh, I love auditioning, which I think is, you know, they must be on crack or something. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. It's possible people can work themselves into that mindset. It would be great, you know, if I thought the best thing in the world was to audition for something. It would be great in a way. But it isn't.
Were you ever worried about typecasting?
No, I never was. I'd always heard about it, and, you know, I'd always heard, like, people like, you know, heroes of mine, people like Basil Rathbone or Humphrey Bogart, somebody like that, would complain about being typecast and so on. And, you know, I mean, I think maybe some people feel that huge success in one area with one role or something like that is, you know, inhibits them or something. But I think there's some self-denial in that kind of an argument, too. I think that I've always been pretty pragmatic about what was going to happen in my career. I never expected to be a star. I always knew I was a character actor, and, you know, I never worried about that or resented that, ever. As long as I was working, that was the important thing, and every once in a while you got a decent job or, an interesting role. You worked with cool people. You know, that doesn't happen all the time, but even if it happens every six times, you're doing well, So I never thought about typecasting because at the time, I really didn't think there was much of a future for these movies. You know, this was pre home video even, Risky Business and Revenge of the Nerds. I mean, they came out, but, you know, at the time, you weren't thinking this is going to have a long life on DVD. You know, you figured if it only ran 3 weeks in the theater, it would disappear, and that would be the end of it. You know, maybe you would see it on cable, you know, or something. But, you know, you had no real reason to think that it was going to be, developing a kind of cult following or anything, because, you know, I just didn't think there was room for that. And it was only when they started playing them a lot on cable, and then they came out on video, and then they came out on DVD, and then they, you know, that whole thing started, and then you begin to realize that what you thought was something that was going to come and go fairly quickly was now, you know, pop culture legend in a way, which was as much a surprise to us as anyone.
I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to ask you about your new show, King of the Nerds.
Ah.
The show is doing great. I mean, how happy are you about that? I mean, it's really good.
It's beyond my expectations. This is the thing that I was thinking about actually this morning. Obviously, we had a show last night that aired, and we're getting down to the last 2 weeks of this season. And I was marveling at the fact that was a show that Robert Carradine and I came up with over lunch or something. We had gotten together, and this was 8 or 9 years ago.
Oh, that long ago, wow.
Oh, yeah, it was a long time ago originally. And we came up with this idea, and we pitched it. And people were very lukewarm about it. And, you know, our view was, you know, we had our careers. We weren't going to get involved with something if there was not, you know, with people who were lukewarm about it. It was just a lot of work and stuff, and we wanted people who were enthusiastic. So we let it go. And then, you know, whatever it was, 3 years ago or so, we came up with it again, and we thought, well, you know, maybe now the time is right. And if we went to Electus and 5x5 Media, our two production partners, and it just happened. I mean, we had one meeting with them, and they said, please don't tell this idea to anyone. You know, they were so enthusiastic and so excited about it, and they understood what we wanted. Even though it changed, it evolved as an idea. The idea that we had originally kicked around evolved over time, and it became what it is now, King of the Nerds. It was not something that every step, you know, that you make when you get your production partners on board, and then you have to sell it to a network, and we talked to a couple of different networks and wound up happily with TBS, which has been very supportive. And we, you know, every step of the way, you keep expecting for the whole thing to blow up. Or even if it doesn't blow up, you expect it to somehow wind up being a disappointment. And it never did. And now I look at it last night and I think, Jesus, it's better than I ever dreamed. I don't know about Robert, but for me, I look at the show and I think it's really a delight, and I love doing it, and it's connecting with people, and it's just so strange, because it's one of those things, just like I never dreamed that I would make movies, you know, I never dreamed I would be in a reality show, you know, that was not ever was I ever thinking that. And honestly, if people had come to me and said, would you host King of the Nerds, I would probably have said no, because if it was just a matter of me hosting and being, you know, oh, it's the guy from Revenge of the Nerds and he's hosting, that would not have been of much interest. But the fact that it's worked out so well, and it is so much fun to do, and I love those nerds so much, and I love the people that we're working with, and I mean, it's just beyond belief.
You know, you're also an executive producer on this. So, what are your duties?
They changed between first season and second season. Okay. I mean, the first season, you know, we were in all of the development meetings, the original meetings, back before we actually got underway, but we weren't coming up with challenges or anything. That was something that went to people who do that for a living, because, you know, you have to have a certain kind of mind to be able to come up with that kind of thing. You know, we got involved in the casting of it once they had eliminated, you know, hundreds of people, and they were down to 30 or something. Then they started bringing us into the casting process. But by the time we were filming, I found myself getting much, much more deeply invested in the production end. And I would spend, you know, because we had them on camera for practically 24 hours a day, so I would spend just ridiculous amounts of time there, sitting with the executive producers, helping to write some of the material that needed to be written, like the, you know, send-off, you know, coming up with ideas for each nerd when they left Nerdvana, and that kind of thing. So I got a lot more interested in it. And now, come around to the second season, I was doing everything. I was doing location scouts and budget meetings and challenge meetings and casting sessions from the very early stages. So I became a lot more involved in the show, and, you know, going to all of the production meetings once we start working. So a lot, the answer is, now, because it means a lot to me, and I still don't find it boring, which I suppose the actual executive producers who do shows like this, have done shows like this for 20 years, may find it pretty run-of-the-mill, but I still find it exciting.
Well,
And I also really, really love these nerds. I mean, there's no better word for it.
I also like the show that the show has women on it, you know?
Well, there were two things that Robert and I insisted on when we pitched the show. One was that there be a parity in genders, because in the first place, we knew from experience, we both have daughters, and they have definite nerd cred, each of them in their own way, and we knew that women were as big nerds as men. But there is a traditional thing. I mean, it started with Revenge of the Nerds. Big Bang Theory was really the same way for a long time. The idea that nerds are men, and women are just what they get when they're lucky, you know?
Right.
And apart from everything else, it's wrong, and it also perpetuates a sort of, frankly, misogynist, you know, double standard, and we just wanted to do something different. We didn't want that anymore. So that was a big issue for us, it was a surprise, actually, I think, that was what we were going to do. That the network, I think, was a little taken aback by it, because it just is so rooted in the culture that nerds are men.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the first thing. The other thing that this was essential, and I keep saying it to our executive producers, you have to remember, when all else fails, go to the last scene of Revenge of the Nerds. Go to that scene on the pep rally. You know, there's nobody who sees that who isn't moved. It's funny, but it's also moving. And that I felt it was really important to keep heart in this and keep, you know, obviously have the humor in it, which is really important. It's not to take itself seriously, but also have the heart in it and treat the nerds like people. Not make them look stupid, you know, or like Beauty and the Geek, not make them objects of ridicule.
Oh, I hated that show.
Who then have to be made into good-looking guys by vacuous women.
Yes.
You know, we needed to do, the idea for us is, being a nerd is what you should strive to be, not something you need to escape from. And those are the two big issues for us. And, you know, as long as the show runs, if it continues to run, you know, that's going to be something that I never get tired of saying.
Curtis, I know I've kept you on the phone for probably longer than you had wanted, but I think I could honestly talk to you for the rest of the day. But I won't, and I will let you go. But thank you. I really, really, truly appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And again, total, complete childhood dream for me to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Lance.
Thanks, Curtis, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV and theater, and so much more. Follow me on Twitter @DailyActor and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/DailyActor. Thanks for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.